This is the Apple This Extra.
Hello and welcome to Apple Viz Extra number 66. My name is Dave Nason. It is that time of year again. WWDC conference is on this week and Apple kicked it off today with the opening keynote where they introduced us to all the new software for this year. And in the grand tradition of Apple Viz, we have gathered to talk about everything that Apple told us today. Let's go in reverse alphabetical order. I am joined by, firstly, Tyler Stephen from the great state of Maine, I believe. How are you, Tyler?
I'm good.
Great to have you here. And I am joined by Thomas Donville, also known as Anonymous, from the very hot state of Kansas. Is Kansas a state or a city? I don't know. Missouri, right?
Kansas City, close enough. Hi. How good to be here.
How are you? And also from anywhere and everywhere around the world these days, Scott Davert. How are you, Scott? And where are you, Scott?
I am in the state of confusion. So, hello from the state of confusion, and it's great to be back yet again, Dave. It's kind of become our group the last few times, it seems like.
Yeah. And it's always fun. And it was a long old keynote. It was closing in on 2.5 hours, I think. So,
yeah.
Lots packed into that, mostly software, a little bit of hardware. So we'll go through all of that. We'll focus more on the stuff we find more interesting and the stuff that's accessibility related, but we'll touch on just about everything. So to kick this off, we have tvOS. It was quite a quick little segment from Apple. It wasn't the main feature of the show by any stretch, but they did introduce a few new little features and things that people have been looking for, including multi-user support and also a new home screen and also controller support. So PlayStation and Xbox controllers will now be supported, which got quite a big cheer. So obviously there's people out there who think that there's room for improvement on the gaming front, and that's Apple TV. So Tyler, what did you kind of make of this? What stands out in tvOS? Or,
well, I mean, I don't have an Apple TV. It's tvOS, so it's obviously probably the smallest update of the bunch. I think the adding of controller support is sort of a way to make improvements in the gaming space. I know there are games on the Apple TV, but it's not considered a particularly vibrant gaming platform. So I think this is just a way for them to increase its viability in that space.
Yeah, definitely. Thomas, I don't know if you play games yourself, but your family as well. There, do you think they'll be kind of interested in that, the gaming side of it, or?
Not so much on the gaming side of it. It's kind of like, it's almost kind of too late. I mean, really, I don't know anybody that used Apple TV to play games, even if they now support these controllers, which I was kind of surprised by the cheers and the hoots. And I think they were just saying, my gosh, it's way overdue. But at the same time, I'm thinking, I really don't see this growing up unless the arcade get some sort of a boost on the TV. But the biggest takeaway for me on this was obviously the big one is the user profiles. Now we can have multiple users profiles. That is going to be a big thing in our family because, oh my gosh, how many of us can say, my son watches a lot and all his stuff gets in my way and I can't see the stuff I want to see because all of his stuff, recent scene and all that, his music playlist and all that. I really looking forward to that, but it is comical that it only took what, maybe 3-4 minutes to go over the entire Apple OS new changes, which is kind of bad, but I would like to see what this, how far an extension of this new screen that they were talking about. They didn't even mention what changes or anything. I'm curious what the home screen changes is, but that is all I got out of it for myself.
Yeah, it was quite a quick one. All right, Scott, do you have an Apple TV and did anything stand out?
I mean, I didn't. I'm not really a gamer in general, so I mean, it doesn't really it's not really a thing for me, but I mean, you know, if you think about it, going back when the newer Apple TVs launched, that was the thing. Everybody's like, oh, it's going to be great for gaming. It's going to be great for gaming. And then we heard nothing. And then all of a sudden, oh, by the way, you can do gaming on here. And here's a new controller. Now, I think the reason that they pretty much just jumped right over it is because they already did their media event that had a lot to do with TV then. So it got such a big part of the press, if you will, the last time around. So now it was like, well, we've covered most of what we're going to do. So we'll just kind of link it together and push it back to arcade so that, you know, it gives us a chance to promote one of our subscription services.
Yeah.
That was my take on it.
I agree. And they actually showed a trailer, which actually it looks like my kind of show, called For All Mankind, sort of a sci-fi show, which did look kind of cool. So be interesting to see what that's like. And yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, it's, I think the controllers, I remember when they did launch and then everyone is excited, like you said, about gaming. And then they said you had to use the Siri remote. Like they didn't have third party controllers at all. And everyone suddenly was extremely disappointed because it's not really an effective controller for gaming. So it may be too little too late, but you know, time will tell. And
who knows? It may be, I'm hoping that the controllers may be used for controlling the remote in an easier fashion. That's because the remotes can be pretty cumbersome.
Yeah, true. I'd say I don't particularly like the interface of Apple TV. Mm-hmm. So if they have reinvented it a little bit, I'll be interested to see what that looks like. Okay, and that takes us into the next segment, which was on Apple Watch and Watch OS 6. So some of the key points on this one would be a lot more independence, I think, coming to the watch. So we're, you know, an independent app store and the ability to stream audio directly from the watch through more apps and third-party support for that, I believe. Taptic time, which was something that will give you a chime on the hour. And also features around health and fitness, as always, they've been improved. So there's the dose and cycle apps and a new noise detection app as well for looking after your hearing health. So a few different features added to Watch this year. Thomas, you've always been a strong advocate for the Watch gaining its independence from the iPhone, so to speak. So what did you make of it?
This is a game changer. I thought this is no doubt one of the biggest things with Watch, hands down. Now that they're going to gain their own app store independent, this is what we all wanted. With everything to be independent on the watch, we don't have to have that phone tagging along with us. However, I am kind of concerned about the app store. I'm curious how accessible that is for us, as in, you know, I understand everything will be accessible, like it'll bring up the app store, but I always have to type in what I want because dictation doesn't always pick up what I really want to look for. And sometimes it kind of, because typing is going to be extremely difficult on that. I don't think you can do typing. You have to scribble, and that's nearly next to impossible. So I am a little bit concerned about the app store itself. I wonder how much still control do we have with our iPhone and being able to upload apps to the watch, or if it's going to be solely independent, like you can only use the Apple Watch only to download the App Store. So I am very, this is about time they did that. That way they could break away, because we always had to install like Chirp for Twitter, for example. It had to be on iOS on first, and then we had that set up, and then we had to go to the watch and get that set up. It's about time it's by itself. I love that. And I also love the Taptic hourly chime. I do hourly chime now. I'm going to absolutely love that. As always, the activity, I think it's going to be cool. I'm not sure about the activity trend. I am curious because they said by a glance, you can see what you've done the past 90 days. Mm. And I'm curious how that's going to look to us without being really cluttered and busy. So a lot of questions came up for me.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how some of that looks. I think that long-term trending thing is a good step, though. So because you get a lot of data, but we don't really know what to do with it sometimes. So if they can make some moves towards that. Scott, you've the latest Apple Watch as well, don't you?
Yeah, I think that really trends is, you know, it's a good way to track what you've done over time. You know, it's like, okay, if you've done really well for 90 days, how does that look in the last 6 months as opposed to, say, year over year. Apple's trying to get you to buy more into their ecosystem by, well, you have all these workouts that you've done on the Apple Watch. You don't want to go to another platform because you're going to lose all that information. And, you know, when it comes to health data, that kind of stuff's important to see. Oh, okay. I was only burning 400 calories a year ago today. Now I'm burning 850 or whatever. So not in my case, it'd probably be a minus in front of that. I consumed 400 more, 850 more than I ate. But I think that's kind of a neat thing that they're, you know, bringing into the activity. I mean, I think it's, you know, also interesting, the noise detection stuff. I see other implications for that, as I often do with a lot of these things. For example, let's say you're someone who is deaf and you want to know when there's a noise that's over 100 decibels. Maybe you're sleeping. You know, 100 decibels is like a plane flying right over your head.
Or it could really be a fire alarm, though.
Yes. So could they use that to say, hey, there's an extremely loud noise that continues to go off in your environment? You know, that's probably another year or two down the road, but that's just kind of me thinking ahead. It's like, well, I see how this applies to the mainstream, but here's a way it could also apply to, you know, people with disabilities.
Yeah,
that's great, Scott. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, for like smoke detectors, carbon monoxide, anything that has a high shrill detects that.
Well, it could potentially be, you know, like if it's a certain frequency, but I was using decibels, you know, the loudness of the noise. You know, 100 to 110 decibels is like, you know, you're running a really loud piece of machinery, like a lawnmower, and you're right in front of it, or a, you know, a plane taking off directly overhead, those kind of things. But, you know, they would also include higher pitched noises that are, you know, up, way up at the high end of the spectrum, 5,000 hertz, that kind of stuff. And they would also be at, you know, 100 to 110 dB if you're right under them. So, you know, but and really, let's say you're getting a loud thunderstorm, you know, you may not wake up to the vibration of, you know, your bed slightly vibrating, for example, but, you know, a constant alert, hey, there's a loud noise in the area. Maybe you realize there's a really strong thunderstorm going on outside or something, you know, so there's a lot of different potential places you can go with this technology.
Yeah, good thinking. Tyler, did anything stand out to you?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I don't have an Apple Watch. So, and the noise detection feature isn't available on iOS. But I think it's interesting nonetheless. And I would use it if it was on iOS. But because I don't have a watch, it's not a big enough reason for me to get a watch.
Cool. Yeah, so watchOS, yeah, there's a few nice new features. And I suppose, you know, it comes back to your big topic, Thomas, is the year-on-year, the increasing independence of the watch. And I just think we're really starting to see that accelerate now. I think that's the big takeaway for me from watchOS 6. So to that end, we will talk about iOS 13 on the iPhone, because we'll be coming back to the iPad, which has now split, interestingly enough. Some of the key features on iPhone, there's the long-awaited and long-talked-about dark mode. So this will probably interest low-vision users, very possibly, and it does look pretty cool.
Well, come on, what are you talking about? We've had screen curtain for years. I have dark mode on my phone right now.
A good one, Scott.
You've got very dark mode. We also had some more performance updates. So they say Face ID is 30% faster. Apps will launch twice as fast. Update packages and downloads are smaller as well. So all that aimed towards improving performance. We have new things like a new keyboard, which I don't know whether there'll be an accessible version of that yet or not, but time will tell. A big focus on privacy and security. So things like location services, much more granular control now given to the user. So you can give permission just once rather than forever. And even if you do give it forever, Apple is keeping tabs on what they're doing with that. And a new Apple sign-in So we're probably all familiar with signing up for an app and saying, you can create an account, or you can just use your Facebook credentials or your Twitter or your Google credentials. Well, now you can use Apple credentials. And the difference Apple say is that they are keeping those private and they're not using that data in the way that the social media companies do. So that's a big theme, I think, for iOS 13. Scott, go to you first this time. What did you take away from iOS 13 on the phone?
Well, there's a lot actually in iOS 13 that I find interesting. One of the things that I would like to see is the ability of more integration with this TTS that we saw a demo of. I thought it sounded really natural. I wouldn't want to try to use it with, you know, synthesized speech when I'm, you know, plowing through web pages and stuff. But for things like reading a book, you know, just as a comfortable setting, or, you know, text messages for people who aren't able to access the screen and don't have any other way to do it, you know, the more natural sounding the voice, the easier it's going to be for them to comprehend the TTS. So I think that, you know, it's one of these things that comes up every year, but it is true to say that text-to-speech technology continues to improve. And I think that what we saw today in iOS 13, that demonstration was a good example of it.
Yeah, the new Siri voice did look pretty cool, didn't it? Tyler, did you like that? And did you have any other takeaways?
I think it's always good that text-to-speech is improving. This new neural text-to-speech, as they're calling it, I'll need to obviously see it in practice. But the bigger thing with Siri that I wonder every year and am consistently disappointed with is the relative lack of smarts in compared to other assistants like Google Assistant and Amazon Echo. Siri collects less user data, which is definitely a win for privacy. But I think it still lags behind in a lot of the AI as far as what it can do.
Well, you know, the other thing that I remember with 13 that I thought was, it was a minor thing, but to me, I'm like, yeah, finally, was the ability with over, I think they said 6,000 online radio stations to be able to say, you know, hey Siri, play whatever, whatever, and it'll do it. So that is kind of a minor thing, I guess, in comparison to some of what we're talking about. But for me, a very welcome thing, because that is one of the things I've hated with my iOS device. Okay, I have access to all these great stations. That's wonderful. But I had no easy way to quickly pull them up. I had to use my Echo for that.
I agree with you completely. Like, and well, HomePod isn't available where I live anyway, but even if it was, I wouldn't have bought one because it was Apple Music and nothing else by voice. So the fact that TuneIn Radio and iHeartRadio and stuff are available now, I think is really big. Whether Spotify and things like that are also included wasn't too clear. Did anyone?
I don't think Spotify, that would be very good because the HomePod, it would add another music service to the HomePod. From the keynote, I didn't get the impression that Spotify was going to be added. But I think iHeartRadio maybe and Pandora.
iTunes.
Or something like that.
Or I'm sorry.
TuneIn.
I thought they mentioned TuneIn as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's an app I use every day on my phone, so it'd be great to have it by Siri.
There's one more. What is it? Last FM Radio or something?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Did anything else stand out for you, Thomas, in 13?
Well, the four biggest things you guys are pretty much touched on a few. Obviously, the two biggest thing I think in terms of accessibility for us is the new improved Siri voice. I think that's really fantastic. I would love to see how that works with VoiceOver. It is, like Scott says, it's not going to be as like Alex by any means as responsive. But if I can have a more natural sounding like that when I'm reading my books and stuff, I'll hands down, I would love to hear that rather than Alex. The dark mode is going to come in really good handy for people with a low vision that are that see the screen really high contrast. I think that's going to help out. But the two smaller things like what Scott mentioned about the live radio, options are my two biggest thing I came away with is the Apple sign-in was a, oh my God. I mean, how many times have I signed up for an app that wants your email and you, or you can either create an account or use Facebook. And I mean, we all have to, we all probably do the same thing. We just click on Facebook and we just don't think of it at the privacy concern. Now we have this Apple sign-in option. We just use Apple sign-in and it'll just be in an alias. It'll generate a bogus email and then you can just toss it away. That was, I think that was huge in terms of privacy. And then my last favorite, which was very little minor, was the new option to send spam straight to your voicemail. I don't know how to detect what is spam and what's not, but any direction with that is always a big plus for me too.
Yeah, it's not a big problem I have. I don't get a lot of spam calls, but if you do, I can imagine how frustrating it would be. So another thing that I noticed as well with Siri, did you guys spot a feature, something about AirPods and how you can have notifications automatically kind of chime in and read the message and suggest a reply or something? I think that would drive me insane. What about anyone else?
And you know your friends, because they're definitely your friends if they're doing this to you. If they know you have that on, they're going to be sending you the most horrible things. Yeah. You know? Don't ever hook your iOS device and don't ever, you know, hook it to anything external anymore, because
I think that'd be distracting in some ways. I mean, I hope you can control it like I do with my watch. I only have certain things come through my watch when it comes to notification. Yeah. Can you imagine being on a treadmill and you're watching or listening to music and you got somebody that's tweeting or messaging you 100 times? It's like, that would be annoying, but a nice feature.
Yeah, it's nice if you want it, but I hope you can turn it off.
Yes.
I'm sure you will be. I mean, that'd be a pretty major thing for them to not be able to toggle.
Yeah.
I think handoff coming to music kind of, so you can pick up or leave off music from between your HomePod and your iOS devices. I think that's pretty, well, it's about time kind of thing, but it's really good to see that as well.
Yeah, well, being able to, if you are a HomePod owner, the ability to walk up to the HomePod with your iOS device and put it in front of it, and it's supposed to just automatically click over, and you'll be able to hear it on the HomePod. So.
Yeah, I would kind of so-so on that. I mean, the handoff to the Mac and the phone was a big thing, but I don't know.
I think it's good for music, for media. I think it's going to be really useful. Do any of you
for
guys
HomePod
use
owners?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I'm not.
Neither am I.
I do not have one.
Do any of you guys use Shortcuts much? Because that app is now going to be built in. And they said, I think I got the impression that the stuff that's in settings and stuff now, everything is going to be moved from there into the Shortcuts app. So the pre-made ones are going to be in there, as well as improved ability to kind of make your own shortcuts. Do any of you guys use Shortcuts or have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I still use it from time to time. I think it's about time they baked it into one place. It was already confusing enough in three different places. I think it's isolated in one place, but I really don't see any significant improvement. And would I use Shortcut more? No, not really. I like the new automation things, like, hey, we noticed you do this a lot. We'll create a shortcut for you based on, instead of me having to create one, which is nice, but I was kind of hoping they would open it up even further. That's what I was really hoping.
Yeah, me too.
If they were going to do that, they would have done it at this conference, right? I mean,
You know, we only hear the highlights. It's hard to say. You know, there's always going to be hundreds of things and little things we don't hear about. And so Shortcut may be one of those. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, to see, can you dig further into apps? Like, I was thinking I'd love to be able to start up a specific radio station from TuneIn Radio alongside a few other things when I leave the house, for example, you know. And I still don't know if that's possible, but I'd like to think that kind of stuff will be brought in. And from an accessibility point of view, a really interesting feature that made the stage today was something called voice control. Scott, what did you make of this?
Siri, turn on do not disturb. It didn't do it. I guess I had to get iOS 13 first. I think it's a really cool thing that has a lot of potential certainly for, you know, people who want to be able to control their device for whatever reason, you know, exclusively through their voice. You know, a lot of people with motor impairments would want this, and I'm sure there are certain voiceover users that would like it for various reasons. But, you know, the other thing, you mentioned it as an accessibility thing, and I'm sure it will be, you know, under accessibility. But I think also for some people, like when they're driving, for example, you know, they might know exactly what they want their iOS device to do, but they can't really reach down and fumble around with the screen. So they can just say, you know, scroll up or whatever, you know, next track. You know, next track is already there, but just as an example, you know, you could pretty much from the demo, it seemed like do pretty much anything with it. My question is though, when we bring accessibility into this, let's say I'm a voiceover user and I'm not familiar with the way a sighted individual would interact with their iOS device. Would I then have to learn it in order to talk to it and control the device, or will it take into account, you know, that voiceover is running and adjust my gestures accordingly?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because the impression we got of voice control is basically anything that's on screen you can access. So if you're looking at your icons, you say open such and such. If you're in a message screen and you've typed a message, dictated a message, you say send, and that's actually tapping. And he even said, you know, tap send. So it's actually mimicking the action that a sighted user would be doing. So hopefully when VoiceOver is on, maybe it will be flick right twice or something like that. Maybe it'll work that way, or who knows.
Well, I agree with you, Scott. Is that what are the elements are going to be? Is it going to be based on VoiceOver elements? Because the guy did go right four. I mean, how did he know four and four from what? And so I think it'll be a learning experience, but like Dave says, anything we know, obviously, we just like open mail and then we'll just say tap compose or tap reply. So we know those buttons just because we hear it day in, day out. I think it's just going to be a whole new audio cues. But I'm thinking this is going to be great for my clients that are either have some dexterity issues or motor skill issues with their hands. I have a lot of older people that have to use a pencil because they can't quite tap on things or swipe the way we want to. And I'm thinking to myself, this is huge. This is going to be a game changer because a lot of them don't really understand the voiceover gestures so much. Mm-hmm. But if they can see things and say, what do you want to do? I want to compose. Okay, we'll just say tap compose. I think this is going to be a game changer. This was probably out of the whole keynote, this is my number one thing that I absolutely love about the new things that are coming.
And you guys know I'm the eternal optimist, right? So I was thinking as well, maybe, perhaps, possibly, if this was based somehow on the same underlying framework as VoiceOver, because this voice control needs every element to be distinct, if you follow. So it needs that send button to be actually viewable.
Hard to say, because what if you had a heading? You know, it's not like an element. Maybe they see three buttons there. How would they say that?
But it needs to be able to distinguish what those three buttons are for it to work, just like VoiceOver does. So would this encourage, if this is a mainstream feature, would this encourage more app developers will be encouraged to actually implement this potentially, if it's something that mainstream people will use, that is, like Scott said, in the car or whatever it is, you know?
Well, the thing is with terminology, okay, when you're on a screen, on any home screen, you have a bunch of visual icons and some of them are just pictures. There's no words. So could you interchangeably say tap phone or, you know, tap the phone icon, or I guess phone's a bad example, but, you know, some apps have different creative logos that only show a picture. There's no textual equivalent. So how would that work? Would it just use the text name of it? Or
I think just like VoiceOver, the developer would need to put in
a label
on that, which is why I think maybe it will run on the same thing as VoiceOver. And if this baby gives developers an extra reason to actually make that effort, then hopefully it could be a good thing.
How does this work on a Safari, for say, too? I'm curious how that would say, skip to next heading, skip to next heading.
Yeah.
If that would work, I don't know.
or will it just be scroll down? Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But
seems like more questions than answers at this point.
Yeah.
Well, you know, excuse me. And you know, the thing is kind of the same for dark mode. You know, don't developers have to do specific things in order for it to function correctly on their website? You know, are developers now being asked to do that for the Siri control? And I'm sure that, you know, Google's already working on something that's equivalent, if they don't already have it. So what this could be good for accessibility, because the more we promote textual labels for things like voice control, you know, it will hopefully also benefit voiceover users.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if this would work for like not very accessible apps that have lots of missing labels. I don't know.
That's where I'm thinking. I don't understand how it could. I assume it couldn't. So.
Yeah. Like Tyler said, this poses more questions than answers. But nonetheless, voice control was a huge news for us accessibility folks.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think Scott's absolutely right. Like, I think it is one of those accessibility features, and it will be under, they, you know, it was labeled as accessibility on stage, and it will be in iOS, but it is something that there are going to be situations where even somebody just who's working at their desk and they have their phone, you know, on a stand, and they just want to do something without having to bother picking up the phone. Like, I just think there's plenty of, you know, I don't think you have to have a disability to find this feature useful.
Right.
No doubt.
So that feature, voice control, is going to be across all platforms. So iOS 13, as we've talked about, but also macOS. And next up, we'll talk about iPadOS. That's right. iPad has its own, I suppose it's a forked version of iOS now.
So gasp.
Separated off. Woo! So some of the new features in this new iPad OS, as they are calling it, would include things like improved file sharing, and the Files app seems to be greatly ramped up, improved multitasking features. You can have multiple instances of the same app now in separate windows, which I think is really cool. So it's making it much more laptop-like. You know, you can also plug in external hard drives and things like that as well, and thumb drives. You have things like widgets on the home screen now. So lots of kind of little features like that that are really, it seems that they're trying to make the iPad much more of a laptop replacement for at least some people. So that's kind of the highlights, but there's much more detail in there. So guys, what stood out for you guys in iPad?
See, I think the iPad OS is an interesting direction, which I did not see coming at all. I don't know that I did not even read rumors of it. And I haven't been following the mill as closely as I have in past years because of, you know, job responsibility changes and so on and so forth. But what an interesting direction to go in. You know, we've been talking for years about how iOS and macOS are eventually going to kind of merge into one, and now we're sort of a little more fragmented. So it's an interesting time, but you know, it's very much looking to me like, and this would kind of fall in with the Mac discussion, but it also is the iPad, and that is, well, for a more power user that's going to do video editing and all that, you know, I guess they go with Macs, and then maybe Apple phases out the MacBook Air in favor of the iPad. You know what I mean? Like, they're kind of competing with themselves in some ways here. It's kind of interesting.
They've never minded doing that, though, have they? They've always been happy to take off one of their products with another product, you know? So,
well, I have to agree with Scott. I thought it was a bombshell of splitting up your iOS to its own separate iPad OS. It's like for Scott, I did not see this coming, did not hear this coming. This will totally redefine the entire App Store as we know it, because how many times have we seen iOS? This was designed for iPad and iOS. I'm thinking as a developer, oh my gosh, this is going to be completely, they're going to have to write two separate apps now, which is going to be a major headache for those.
I don't think that's the case, Thomas, because I think it's already the case that you've separate iPhone and iPad apps and they're both based on the same code, but you make a
kind of
version.
Sort of.
I don't think it's going to change that one bit, if I'm honest.
Well, think of it this way. How many of us would more likely own an iPhone and iPad? Okay, I think there would be more hand raised up on that than how many people actually own an iPad and a Mac. It makes me think this is a great and brilliant move on Apple's part to integrate with the iPad and the Mac rather than the iPad and the iOS because of that comparing, because they've been wanting to find a new area to grow, and that would be the Mac for sure. And so let's just say I bought Twitterific for iOS and iPad. Now I'm going to have to buy a iOS by itself and iPad by itself. So this totally changes my dynamic, how I use iOS and iPad apps as a whole, maybe is what I'm trying to get at. And so in that perspective, holy smokes, that was a huge move. But there were the multitasking, the side-by-side app where you have two apps at the same time. I thought that was absolutely cool. I can see that very useful, like a web Safari on one side. I'm doing some researching. And then on the other side, I have my pages up and I can do my documentation. So anything like that, where I have an email on one side and AppleViz up on another side or something, I'm looking at something. So that was pretty cool. The only thing I didn't know about was that they introduced some new finger gestures for those that are sighted. They mentioned about the three fingers pinch in to copy, three finger pinch or to spread out to paste, and then three finger swipe to undo. And Dave and I talked about this earlier before the podcast. We already have text selection, so I get that. So we don't have to do the touch and drag. But I would like to see the three finger gesture pinch to copy, because right now I have to go to edit, swipe down, swipe down, swipe down, copy. Mm. And it would be so much simpler. I just use, however, we would be muddying up even more finger gestures. I don't know how I feel about that. And I'm curious if that will come over as a voiceover gesture.
Or something, because like three fingers is used for things like scrolling, and if they're worried about they could use four fingers for us or something, which is the sort of thing they've done in the past as well.
I think the only thing we do pinch now is one finger, right? The two fingers, we pinch together and pinch out, and it's the only thing we use. So we don't have a three finger pinch in, pinch out. So it could be used.
Yeah, could.
But I think iPad, this is no doubt a game changer for the iPad side. They definitely want to make this as they always want it to be, as for basic novice users, everyday users, just use email, Safari. They want people to go more with the iPad Pro than a laptop, which I can definitely see because I like the download manager. Oh, my gosh, the custom fonts you can buy. There were just so many little things that came into there that was the missing part that I needed. And it's like, wow, it's getting closer.
Yeah. And the hopefully anyway, it turns out as they've promised, with better file management, you know, something closer to the Finder essentially on Mac, you know, something a bit more like Windows Explorer, like you have on Windows, you know, and the ability to plug thumb drives and things in so that it's turning it more into a computer in that way.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how some of this is going to work. I mean, you know, some of this text selection stuff, I would think would be much more easily managed with the rotor. You know, you were talking about having to go into edit and all that stuff, Thomas, on the touch screen. I had to smile to myself. I kept thinking, space with C, or Command C, Command C.
Keyboard wise, it's great, wouldn't it? Oh, yeah. I mean, now you have what they say there's 30 new keyboard commands for iPad now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting again to see what they are and what they do and how they work with, you know.
So for you as a Braille display user or a keyboard user, that's huge. I mean, starting to be more like I actually have a file manager. I actually have a such and such. Yeah.
Well, here's my question. So we have all these ways of, you know, being productive with the screen and moving apps around each screen. How's that going to work on, say, or isn't it going to work on like the new iPad mini 5 when compared to, say, the 12.9 inch iPad Pro? Are they still going to have that same standard set on the iPad mini with the 7-inch screen that they do on the 12.9?
I would imagine it would be any other, like any other features. New features are probably only available on newer devices, new stuff. So no, like for example, I was looking at iPad mini 4 was still supported. Do I think it's going to get some of these things? No, I think it's going to be geared towards the newer devices, maybe the Pro.
But the iPad mini 5 came out, what, a month ago, 2 months ago?
2 months ago.
So are they going to, are they already like excluding the iPad mini 5 from some new features, or that's kind of my question.
Will iPad mini 5 even get iPad OS, or will it be on iOS? You know, it's is it going to be muddier still?
That's a very valid point.
No, that's a good point, and I think that's the compatibility and features is coming soon. I promise it. We will see these things, what features available on what device, and that is going to have to be. I think you're right. I think the iPad is going to get hit the hardest, as in what feature goes on what devices.
Yeah, and like we have to remember, we're 2 hours after the keynote, so there's still a lot of stuff that is gonna it's gonna take some time to filter out and find out about. Tyler, would you see yourself, Tyler? You're a Mac guy, so would you see yourself moving towards iPad Pro in the medium or long term, even?
For me, one of the biggest things is keyboard support. I used to have an iPad. I got rid of it about a year ago because I had just finished college at that point and I really wasn't using it. And that, anyway, was an iPad Air, which wouldn't be supported in iOS 13 anyway. But keyboard support is probably one of the big ones. The way I use my Mac is, say, apps, say command tabbing from app to app, being able to quickly quit an app with a keyboard shortcut, not having to go into an app switcher. So that's just what I'm used to. As far as iPad OS, this went largely under the radar. The only rumor I saw was right before the keynote. I did a last minute check on Mac Rumors before the keynote started, and it was there. Apparently some developer had found some changes in the license agreement that referenced an iPad OS.
I saw it on IDB as well about 2 hours before the keynote.
And I don't know what this actually, I don't know how much of this is marketing and how much of this is technical relating to developers. So I have a hunch, and I could be wrong, but I have a hunch that a lot of the code is still the same, in that I didn't get the sense that they had completely rewritten iPad OS or iOS for the iPad, but they were making it into iPad OS so they could focus on specific iPad related features. But I would imagine that we'd be basically following the same or similar update schedule you know, in the fall when iOS 13 comes out. And I would assume, assuming that they don't make a new versioning scheme for iPad OS, that would be considered version 13 of iPad OS. So I think it's, I don't know how much code level changes there are in iPad OS versus iOS, besides the obvious device support and Pro features, but other than that, I would assume it's the same code base. I don't know how much will change, if anything, as far as apps go.
I know, I agree with you. I think it's like for a few years now, they've been giving iPad slightly different features, like slide over.
So I think it's a way for them to differentiate. I would assume it's largely marketing, a way to differentiate the differences.
Yeah, like I say, they've been doing this anyway for a few years, and I think they just want to turn that up to 11 now, so to speak, and
Make it clear that the iPad is more capable than what the conception that users would have of iOS.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll probably have to have one more app directory category on AppleViz.
Yes, possibly.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they branched out, if they drastically branched out their apps into separate categories for iPhone and iPad, because I think that would be hell for developers.
Because they're actually, despite the fact that they're trying to, they're separating out the operating systems this little bit more, as you said, Thomas, but at the same time, they're also trying to bring them all together in terms of the apps, because Project Marzipan is now called Project Catalyst, which has been brought to developers and apparently makes it an awful lot easier to bring iPad apps to the Mac.
To the Mac, exactly. And so that is brilliant PR perspective on them, because they're trying to, I think what happened was that, okay, as an illusion, as a consumer base, we're all thinking, okay, iPad is just like the iPhone. It's just bigger. You know what I mean? Now they're redefining this whole concept of retraining our brain to say, oh, this is just like a miniature Mac. And so that makes a, I think that is the big direction they're trying to go with.
Yeah, I think it's,
they're kind of going down the road Microsoft has already gone down. You know, Microsoft is in the business of, well, somewhat selling hardware now. You know, but they're trying to make a space for it that doesn't say, oh, well, you don't need a laptop anymore. So it's, I guess they're kind of hitting two different markets, though. You know, there's a lot of things you wouldn't want to do on, say, a Surface Book that you would want to do on a laptop. But there are certain things on a Surface Book that you're perfectly fine doing, you know, your email, your web browsing, that sort of thing. So I think that's a different way, like Thomas said, to sort of differentiate really. Well, you know, yeah, actually, this isn't an iOS device anymore. I guess it's an iPad device. So when you have that happen, it seems to me kind of like they're just trying to keep up with the market, you know, because it's been fairly successful for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's face it, guys. I mean, the bottom line is direction and what market they need to get into. iPhone, saturated. iPad, lots of room. Everybody could use, not everybody owns an iPad. So they're trying to find new market to push into now, since they got it. They have to do that. They have to change direction. So what better way of pushing the iPad Pro towards like a miniature Mac?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting area. And suddenly, hopefully, we'll have lots more apps in the Mac App Store, because it's been a bit sparse.
Oh yeah, no doubt, right? They made a big deal of that. You know, they were saying how many hundreds of thousands were already iPad apps that can now be translated over to Mac. I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. And that takes us into Mac OS 10.15 Catalina.
Catalina.
Hey, Catalina.
We had some...
Hey, Catalina.
All we had some interesting now. New features.
Hey, Catalina.
Is that better?
Yeah, fantastic. Okay. We had some lovely new features. So, yeah, probably the key features in Catalina were the death, shall we say, of iTunes. So it is gone. No more iTunes. It's been around nearly 20 years.
Bye-bye.
Craig Federighi made what I thought was quite funny jokes, actually, about the clutter that people have complained about in iTunes. I said, we're gonna add even more in here, the calendar and your mail.
Of course, no. There'll be a dock. Yes, of course, exactly. We can use Safari and iTunes.
So it's all gone. And now we have three new apps, which are music, podcasts, and TV. So that's where all your media will be. And they say the music app will be as powerful as iTunes was, because of course music on iTunes is more powerful in terms of creating smart playlists and other things, features that are on that aren't on, for example, the iPhone or the iPad. So they say that we won't lose any features, I believe they said. Syncing now will be done through the Finder, they said. So you'll open a Finder in the sidebar, there'll be an option to sync your iPhone. So that'll be interesting to see how that kind of works out. There's a new feature called Sidecar, which allows you to use your iPad as a second screen for your Mac, if you so wish. And then some new security features as well. So the Find, and this goes across all platforms again, the Find My iPhone and Find My Friends have been combined into one app called Find My, and that's now available on Mac as well. And you can find your iPad or find whichever device it is if you lose it. Bluetooth beacons and all sorts of technical stuff that I'll let you guys tell me a bit more about. So Tyler, you're a Mac guy. Are you looking forward to 10.15?
Yes. I think iTunes has outlived its usefulness all this time, as said in the keynote and just a minute ago on this podcast. It's gotten to do so many things. Like, it started as music, just ripping and mixing and burning CDs back in 2001, mm-hmm. to the iPod introduction later that year. iTunes was introduced in January of 2001. iPod came out in October of 2001. And then, of course, the iTunes Music Store in 2003. Movies and TV shows in, you know, to 2005, 2006, you know, iPhone 2007, App Store 2008. Through all these years, iTunes it just became the dumping ground for all of this stuff. And got to a point where it became so bloated. They tried rewriting it a couple times. But it just, the more features they added, it got more complicated, tougher to use. And I saw this coming because a while back they took the App Store functionality out of iTunes and just had it focus on music, movies, TV, podcasts. And iOS, on the other hand, had dedicated apps for all those things. Because if iTunes is that difficult to use on a Mac, I can't imagine how hard it would be on an iPhone. You know, how much harder it would be on an iPhone with, you know, less real estate. But, you know, I think now that these three apps separated, that'll help sort of streamline the experience of consuming media in the Apple ecosystem. The security features, Macs with a T2 security chip, the iMac Pro, MacBook Pro, MacBook Air, Mac Mini, but for some reason not the iMac, the latest one, for some reason did not have a T2 chip. You can get activation lock on that. Find My, it's now an app in macOS, and they've consolidated Find My Friends and Find My iPhone. It'll be interesting to see how that works. I wonder if it'll be come off as less clunky than the Find My iPhone app on iCloud.com, which you currently use if you want to find an iPhone or a Mac on from a Mac on the web. And the other thing is now they have the Find devices that are offline based on crowdsourcing from other nearby devices anonymously. Now, this was talked about in the keynote. I don't know how this works or, you know, much of the underlying technology behind it, but basically the way it was described, the way I understand it, is that when a Mac is sleeping, it gives off a beacon via Bluetooth that other devices can pick up on. So if a user finds that they have misplaced their Mac, they can, from a remote location, use the Find My app to use other devices in the location to, and then relay that back to the person finding the device. I don't know how this works. It sounds pretty cool. I don't know how it will work in practice, but it definitely increases the usefulness of the Find My Mac feature, because ever since it was introduced back with OS X Lion, that was back when they referred to it as cat names, it was hindered by the fact that a Mac would have to be connected to Wi-Fi. And say, if you misplaced your Mac and it was not connected at that point, or if someone stole your Mac and wasn't able to get in to connect it to Wi-Fi, it was completely off the grid.
Yeah.
And then the only other thought, I guess Marzipan, they referred to it as marzipan last year. I didn't hear that in today's presentation. They're referring to it as catalyst or something. I didn't see that coming. I didn't hear any word of that before today. And the only other thing is, obviously naming of macOS is sort of a interesting thing to wonder this year, you know, every year. And this year it was a surprise. I didn't see that the name Catalina discussed in the forums. The four contenders were, I believe, Mammoth, Monterey, Rinkin, and Skyline. So this must come out of the blue. I wasn't aware of any trademark filings on it. That's interesting little detail.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of interesting stuff. Thomas and Scott, you guys don't have Macs, do you?
I use one. It's an older Mac, but I still teach people to use it and things like that. Okay. I think this is... I saw it coming. I knew the marzipan was going to blow up, and I think it's going to continue to bigger and bigger. Just because of the concept of, I mentioned before, it's all PR related, but the Catalyst name was new, and I think my impression going away from this on the Mac side was there wasn't like any major new things. There's a lot of security cool stuff. I thought that it's about time. The Find My obviously made sense. It's about time we grouped this together and so all of our Apple products can be found in one app along with your friends. And I thought that was a pretty cool features. What I came away with the Catalina was I didn't get the impression that it was going to be a thought at one time. I thought the iPad app would be able to be used on a Mac, but that's not the case. It sounds like what they were talking about in the Swift section was there's a new selection though for iPad developers they can just click on, and it generates these Mac apps on the fly for them for the most part. Like it was mostly complete, but they just have to do a little bit cleanup, and then voila, they got a Mac app version of it. So that, does
it
that
is,
mean
it is though built on the iPad and iOS code base, so it's built on UI kit.
Grow the ecosystem of the Mac,
right? So that just blows my mind. And but you know, I think one of the things that kept me away from the Mac more, and I think a lot of people will agree, is that most companies nowadays use Microsoft, but the thing that kept me away, there wasn't enough software. There wasn't enough app for me that to say, I have four different versions of firewalls I can use. There's 15 different ways of this. And the Mac didn't have that. But now this changes the whole dynamics. If I think they were wanting to try to take all the millions of developers they had the iOS platform and the very small niche of people just for the Mac. Now they're trying to swell that number towards the Mac so the Mac would have more compelling reason and things to use. And I thought, what a perfect PR gimmick again for Apple is in a brilliant move to bring the iPad usability over to the Mac. And that's why they made it such a big deal, like where they said, 500,000 iPad apps could now be moved over to Mac if they wanted to. And they push so hard to make it like, we even give you the tools to do it. Just click this and 90% of your code is already done. It's not like you have to rewrite the whole thing. And they're trying so hard to make that number swell up. And I think it was a brilliant move on the Mac. And I think the Mac will only grow because of that. And especially, you know, how many times have I heard from people, I want to get a Mac because I love my iOS. It's got to be the same feeling, right? No, it's not. It's totally different. But if I knew some of my favorite iOS app is now on a Mac, it really would change my mind. So I was really pleased and happy and was not disappointed with the Mac stuff. Now, I know that some of the heavy, hardcore Mac, I don't know if they're going to like this new approach.
Well, they don't have to. The thing is, previous apps are still there, and you can still build a dedicated Mac app using AppKit, or you can... build one of these new Catalyst apps, if you will.
Yeah, like Scott said, if you're a Logic Pro user, you're still going to use that. If you're a Final Cut user, you're still going to use a Mac. I mean, if you're not going to, those aren't going away, but what I'm saying is that the general consumers, Mac has always been known to like those audiophiles or videoholics that need those power or writers and publishers and stuff like that. But now we're talking about general users that might be more compelling. I don't know.
I think it's already a great system for general users, but except for things like, especially around accessibility, things like Microsoft Office and things just haven't been as good. And that's always been a problem. So I'm hoping things like that will improve as well. And Thomas, at a mere $6,000 starting price, how many Mac Pros are you going to buy?
That Mac Pro, I will admit, my mouth was watering. When I heard the specs are coming out of that Mac Pro, I was blown away. 28 core chips with ungodly amount of RAM. And the one that made me laugh the most was a 1.4 kilowatt supply.
Yeah.
I was like, holy cow, that's a huge power supply.
I could run a city on that.
Yeah, and my favorite was not only that, but I was thinking, oh my God, the electricity that's going to use on that thing.
From the green company that is Apple.
Yeah, for being green, your power is going bzzz. And oh my gosh, but the everything about it, the sheer power when they were demonstrating 3 8K videos streaming at once, just I was like, oh my gosh. And for audioholics, just give you an idea, let's just say audios, for example, they were showing some samples with music score, and that had like 30 tracks or something. They kept adding to it, and just give you an idea, with the newest MacBook Pro that I played with, the 2019, I could probably get about 100 tracks in there before it peaks out my CPU. But in this demonstration, they were showing over 1,000 tracks. I was like, oh my gosh. And the 6K, was it? The 6K Retina display, 32 inch, and you can have six of them side by side. That tells you a lot, because I have a client that uses a Mac and he needs three monitors. And he had one of those larger monitors. And I tell you, it won't work because it takes so much sap out of your processor just to have three, so we can only get two. And so when he got six running flawlessly, that just blew my mind. But you're right, though, we're talking about money and computers that we'll never be able to see or touch, but just the thought of it just made my mouth water. I was just like, beautiful. And you can have two of those side by side connected and rack mounted. You get a desktop that's rack mounted now.
And it's on wheels, though, so you can wheel it around the office if you want.
I didn't mean to get too tech over there. I that's the tech in me. I was going,
no, it is. It's a heck of a machine.
Yeah, those specs are jaw-dropping.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But yeah, they're the machines, obviously, not for the likes of us. They're the machines for the people who are making movies and whatnot. So, guys, that
other thing I would say is, and I need to test this with macOS Catalina, is the original incarnation of Marzipan, or what is now being called Catalyst, is the apps were, they could only run on, top layer of the OS. So it couldn't really integrate with a lot of the other services that are baked into the operating system. So I'm hoping that with this latest improvement in macOS Catalina, that apps from the iPad can take advantage of more that the Mac has to offer, can access more of the file system. I think printing, I know like apps, the four apps that were introduced last year, you couldn't print from them if you wanted to. And there were places of the file system that they were not able to access. So that's what I would like to see improve.
So yeah, that goes back to my original question was, so do we, when that app comes out to the Mac store, just, you know, because it was designed that way, Do you find that in the iPad store, or do you find that in the Mac store?
In the Mac store.
Maybe both, depending on what you have, what you can access. If you have an iPad,
the exact
app store on the iPad and the Mac, I'd assume the Mac app store.
Yeah.
So if you bought it for the Mac, can you transfer it over to the iPad?
I'd imagine it'll be separate purchases.
Yeah.
I don't know now, but I would. I suppose maybe there will be option, because you know the way at the moment you could have a developer can have separate iOS and iPad, sorry, iPhone and iPad apps at, you know, that you pay for separately, or they can have it as an all-in-one where you get it for both. So maybe it'll be the same, where it's up to the developer.
I would think if you're a developer, and they have their similarities, but you're going to have to do code modification of some sort.
Yeah,
you know, to run on both. So, you know, as a developer,
with a keyboard and mouse and a touchscreen.
Yeah. Mm. So as a developer, you know, look, you want to be paid for your work. So, you know, from a developer's perspective, look, you bought the iPhone app. That's great. But guess what? The Mac app I had to build up separately from the ground up. So I'm not going to give you a free version of that on the Mac, which is a totally different, in a lot of cases, revenue stream, depending on, you know, the company producing it, as opposed to what you have on iOS. And you already see that, you know, a lot of developers will have Mac apps that you have to purchase separate from iOS. So now they've got another potential revenue stream. Whether the consumer is going to go along with that, well, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
I thought the keynote as a whole was definitely more interesting this year than last year. I thought last year, I think I fell asleep literally. I actually felt this one a little more intriguing. I thought it did have some new things in there we weren't expecting, and I was happy to hear some of the new things they had to offer. I think some people will come away disappointed. They think they expect more, but I think if you look at it and as in the standpoint how significant of a difference it makes, I think it'll be huge. But I'm thinking, and I'm also thinking as a beta user, this is going to be a complete nightmare on the iPad. I can just see it already. It's going to be a complete nightmare.
And yet I'm looking forward to it. Do you know that?
Exactly.
Well, that's sort of, you know, you really got to get your hands dirty and get in there and, you know, do it. You know, they really do depend a lot on, you know, the early adopters to make this process work. And I think it's important that we remind people, you know, who will be beta testing, please report bugs you find to Apple. Even if you think, well, you know, two or three other people might have reported that, so I shouldn't do it. No, do it, because those two or three other people might be thinking the same thing you are. And if Apple's receiving the same report over and over again, they're more likely to investigate it than if they just get one instance. So,
God, I'm so with you, Scott. I'm so with you. If there's 100 million of you out there and I know you're using it, you better be using that feedback or I'm coming after you, man, because that's what it's used for. And that's why we're on beta. You need to send these feedbacks in.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, all of us on the team here will be using this software beta testing over the summer and following Scott's advice and getting those bug reports filed so that there's hopefully a good system for us come September. And check out applevis.com also in September when these software drops. And finally, we'll just have a quick chat about which devices are going to be supported on these new platforms. Thomas?
The iOS, for those on iOS, a lot of people are anxious to hear that. You have heard so many different rumors on here. So here's the deal. If you have an iPhone 6S and later, it will support iOS 13. And the biggest cheer, and I can hear a lot of hoorahs out there, yes, the iPhone SE will support iOS 13. So that's SE, 6S, and above. However, those with the iPod Touch, this is where the bad news come along, is that if you have sixth generation and less, it will not support iOS 13. You will have to have the iPod Touch seventh generation to support iOS 13.
With macOS Catalina, every Mac that could run Mojave minus the 2010 Mac Pro will work. So that is the 2015 MacBook and later, the 2012 iMac and later, the MacBook Air 2012 and later, the iMac Pro 2017, the MacBook Pro 2012 and later, the Mac Pro 2013 and later, the Mac Mini 2012 or later.
That's not a bad list.
Yeah,
that's not a bad list. You didn't drop too many people there at all.
I think in both cases, they're still bringing a lot of people along. So
They're trying to keep it because the markets are so saturated that there are so many older devices in use. They're trying to get as much use out of them as they can, you know, so things don't become obsolete before their time.
So really on iOS, you only lost the 5S, 6, and the iPod Touch 6th generation. Folks. Yep.
So anything A8 based or earlier.
Cool. Good. Yep. Well, guys, I think I'm going to call that a show, and thank you guys for coming on. So Tyler, Scott, Thomas, thank you so much for joining me on this show once again.
And we would like to give a special shout out to Catalina. Congratulations on your divorce from iTunes.
It was a pleasure. I enjoyed doing this.
Yes.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye, guys, and thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AppleVis Extra. To learn more about us, visit our website at www.applevis.com. Follow us on Twitter @AppleVis and like us on Facebook.